Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Silent Spring Institute is a Massachusetts-based research organization that's trying to understand how synthetic chemicals in our environment impact our health. We know there are many such chemicals in our furniture, our cosmetics, our cleaners, even our drinking water in some cases. One key piece of information that's often missing, though, is how much of those chemicals we actually have in our bodies. Earlier this year, they launched a crowdsourced study to measure the levels of 14 common household chemicals in the urine of hundreds of people. I signed up to be one of them, and I recently invited lead scientist Ruth Ann Rudell to my house to go over my results and see what we could learn.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Okay, good.
Come on in. I've actually got my results up in the kitchen.
Okay.
So this is these are the results that I got back. First of all, I thought it was really interesting that overall the people who got their urine tested as part of this project had lower chemical burdens than the average American.
Yeah.
Surprising?
Yes. In general, no. I guess it's not surprising, but you never know until you actually collect the data and look at it what you're going to find. And so this sort of fits into what we might expect, and but it's the first time we could really evaluate it. So,
all right. So one that surprised me came back. I had higher levels of chlorinated phenols than most other people in the study. So what are those, and where would that have come from?
So great question. Lots of people have that question, and we have that question too. This is one of the more mysterious of the measurements of the chemicals that we picked in this study. So there are two different chlorinated phenols that we measured. And if you look in the literature or at other studies, they're defined as one of them coming from an herbicide called 2,4-D that you might find in a lawn care product, a weed killer. The other one, a metabolite of mothballs and those sort of hard toilet disinfectants. So we wouldn't expect a lot of people in our study to have those exposures, because those are maybe easier to avoid. And people who are trying to avoid pesticides, herbicides, or disinfectants would be able to avoid them. But in fact, many people that in our study do have these chemicals. And I've talked to people in our study who are confused, because I talked to somebody who lives in a house that she and her husband made themselves. They live in the woods. She makes all her own cleaning products, and she's like, where would this be coming from? She does use a car. She does work in an office in town. So we talked about some other possibilities. But the bottom line, from all the results we've seen and from everybody that I've talked to, we don't know. And that's one of the things we're hoping to try to do, is to see if we can figure it out.
Okay. See? Next on the list, high levels of an antimicrobial triclosan.
Right. These are your headlines. They're personalized for your results. And I see also, looking down, you've got two happy headlines: lower levels of bisphenols and lower levels of sunscreen chemicals. But we'll start with the antimicrobial. So let's see. That's interesting. Do you think that you try to avoid triclosan or anything that says antibacterial soap, Colgate Total toothpaste, mouthwash?
So come on into the bathroom for a second here.
Let's see. We've got Tom's Children's Strawberry. That should not have triclosan. I'm pretty sure it doesn't. Yeah. Triclosan is easy to avoid compared to some of these other chemicals because, for the most part, it's labeled. Here's another Tom's. I don't see any sign of triclosan here.
So I will tell you, though, this is what's normally in the bathroom, and the week that I was sending in my samples, my Tom's of Maine toothpaste ran out. And I grabbed some old Colgate from the closet. And for probably, I didn't realize it till after I'd sent my samples in, for probably just 2 or 3 days, I brushed my teeth with Colgate Total.
Wow. Okay.
So
that would
be enough
Yes. Yep. Colgate Total. That's most of the people with high triclosan are the toothpaste users.
Okay. So you mentioned some happy headlines here.
You've got three happy headlines. So that is spectacular. So you had the bisphenols. We have to definitely go to the individual results because this is an interesting and sort of complicated story. So bisphenol A, most people have heard about. It was taken out of baby bottles, mostly because of consumer pressure.
And this is a component of plastic.
All right. So BPA is used to make polycarbonate plastic, and that's the hard, crunchy plastic of water bottles, baby bottles, and many, many other, you know, popular and important uses, actually. It's convenient. It's lightweight. It's strong. However, BPA, that molecule, is an estrogen mimic, and it has also quite a few other biological activities. So, like, you wouldn't pick a molecule like that to put into food packaging. It may be that when it's polymerized into polycarbonate, it is not that available. It doesn't come out that much. It does come out, and you can measure the amount that comes out. And it gets into people, and the main route of exposure for people to BPA is generally canned food and food packaging. And people, in fact, people in our study who said they had been avoiding canned food had lower levels of BPA. I think at restaurants you can also get some BPA exposure.
How?
Just because there are a lot of canned products usually go into restaurant food, and sometimes they're holding prepared food in large containers that, you know, as they get ready to serve it, some of those containers are probably made out of polycarbonate too. So when we did a previous study for 3 days, we intervened with five families. We had them collect a urine sample every night for a week. And for the first couple of days, they just did their normal routines. And then for 3 days, we basically catered all their food, and the person who made the food used sort of cooked everything from fresh ingredients, avoided plastic in making the food and storing the food, and it was delivered in like glass Tupperware type of things, glass Pyrex, and their BPA levels dropped in those 3 days by 60%. So we did.
That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah. So we don't know which of all of those things were the most important, but we know that that whole package overall dropped people's levels by 2/3. And the thing that we did find in our study is that there are two BPA substitutes. They also are endocrine disruptors, unfortunately. And they're called bisphenol S and bisphenol F. So BPF and BPS. And you had low levels of them, but many people in our study actually have high levels of them, including me.
So trying to substitute, get rid of BPA, but you end up with these others.
Yeah. We have two hypotheses about why we're seeing this, and one of them is that people in our study are more likely to be avoiding BPA, and that, so they're buying products that say BPA-free, and that those BPA-free products might be more likely to have the substitutes. An alternate explanation is that our data are from people samples who were taken this past year, and the comparison data, which we have from the Centers for Disease Control, are 2 or 3 years older. And these substitutions are happening over time. And so it just may be that when CDC releases their data for samples collected this past year, things will look more similar between the national survey and our study for BPA.
So for me, BPA was low. BPS was low, but in fact, BPF, one of those substitutes, was above the level of most Americans. So are different products using different substitution chemicals?
They probably are, but I don't know. We don't know which. We don't know what products have what chemicals. We don't know which of these bisphenol substitutes are being used in which applications. There's BPA in receipts. People have been talking about thermal paper. Some of these might be more of a substitute for paper, but it's not that easy to find out, essentially, unless you take it to the lab and analyze it, exactly what it's made out of. So that's there's no disclosure requirements. So basically, if we want to know, we have to test it.
Okay, so low levels of a sunscreen chemical, obviously a particular sunscreen chemical, benzophenone 3. What's that?
So benzophenone 3 is a chemical UV filter. It's one of the, it's like active ingredient in a sunscreen, which is a reason that it is easier to avoid than some other chemicals like that aren't labeled. So benzophenone 3, although it has many different names, is usually it's labeled as an active ingredient, whereas something like bisphenol A is not an active ingredient. It's not labeled. Let's go look at your sunscreen collection. One reason you were probably low is that we collected your sample in the winter.
True.
Is that possible?
That's a possibility.
But you might be. But look at this. You're using mineral sunscreens. That's exactly what we recommend, is to use mineral-based sunscreens like titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. And that's what you've got on here.
Now, that's good news, but I have to say the one that, to me, is harder than straight-up sunscreen is women's cosmetics. Mm. So many cosmetics products now actually come with sunscreen, which is presumably a good thing.
There it is, SPF 30, right, on your everyday face lotion. So there are many places that you need to check for what kind of sunscreen there. Look at this, but you've got the mineral sunscreen here too. So that's perfect. Very nice. Titanium dioxide, zinc oxide.
So it is possible to find.
It is possible.
And we don't have to walk around bright white all day,
no,
every day.
No, right.
they've figured out how to make them spreadable enough that you can actually wear them.
Right. And one warning is that, and everybody loves the spray sunscreen, but often what makes the minerals not stay white on you, what makes them blend in, is that they're nanoparticles. Since they're nanoparticles, we think it's not a good idea to breathe them. But when you use those spray bottles, you put a lot into the air and into your breathing zone, or whoever you're applying the sunscreen to's breathing zone. So in general, we would recommend mineralized sunscreens that you rub on and not spray on.
So in fact, we only get like a 50% on our sunscreen, because that was a spray-on mineral.
It was a spray-on.
The kids love the
spray. It was a spray bottle. Everybody loves the spray bottle. So that's... And I always tell people, you can't do everything. Do the things that are easy for you. So... No butyl. Everybody in our study had methylparaben. There's nobody who didn't have any.
So what are these parabens? Where do they usually come from?
Parabens are used as preservatives in lotions and shampoos and soaps. They also have other sources. But the big sources are basically your skin lotion and sunscreen. And so people look for paraben-free products, and you can usually find them. And I recommend that, but it's also true that some products have been labeled as paraben-free and found to actually have parabens. So that's another story, which is that maybe there's lying, but more likely there's just supply chain problems where the manufacturer doesn't actually know what the formulator is putting into the product. And so the matchup between what's on the label and what's in the bottle is not always very good.
I mean, but if it's not labeled, it makes it a little hard to actually be an informed consumer.
I've talked to a few people who, you know, who do make their own, use lotions, use like food oils and things like that to make skin lotion. And we have some recipes in the Detox Me app also for making things. That's, I guess, the only way you can be sure. So your last...
All right, so let's end with some good news here.
Yes, good news. We're going to go out with the good news. Flame retardants... of all the 14 chemicals that we chose to include in this survey, this one is, in my opinion, the most toxic, the bad actor. This is a known carcinogen in animals. So, and based on its carcinogenicity, like it caused tumors in multiple sites in multiple species, very likely to be a human carcinogen as well. It just hasn't been studied. And this chemical... The chemical we measured is a metabolite, BDCIPP, but it's a metabolite of what's commonly called chlorinated tris. And chlorinated tris is a flame retardant that's used, it's added to foam that's put in, used in furniture primarily, added to foam to make the foam, which is very flammable on its own, be less flammable. You have to put a lot of it in order to make the foam less flammable. And as a result, the amounts in people's homes and their dust and their bodies are actually high enough to be, they're high. They're high enough that that in people's urine samples or people's dust samples, we find levels above sort of health-based screening values for acceptable cancer risk, like what EPA would use at a Superfund site if they're evaluating whether there's a problem. They start with these screening levels for soil, and the levels we find in people's dust are above that. So, wow. This is a chemical that's probably being, it's being mostly substituted out now, but I'm sure it's still around a lot. Certainly we found people in our study who had it, and it's not clear that they're that effective. And this carcinogen was chosen to replace the PBDE flame retardants, which were banned in 2003, 2004.
Well, and of course, when you're talking about a chemical that's part of the foam that's in furniture, I mean,
it's still
they may
around.
Have phased it out in 2005, but those couches are still in people's living rooms.
Absolutely, they are. The couches are still in people's living rooms. And so then the same companies, you know, took out that and they put in this carcinogen.
The choices that we've been talking about people needing to make, the level of information needed to just, you know, go buy sunscreen, let alone buy a couch, is pretty overwhelming. But you guys have created an app, right, that should maybe make some of this a little bit easier, a little bit simpler?
Right. I think we have been doing this research now on how people are exposed and what chemicals do for a long time. And each time we come out with a study, we would make another sheet of tips about that. And we finally consolidated all of them into the smartphone app called Detox Me. And the app has got six sort of realms, so household and children and food and personal care products. And then within each of them, you get tips and information about what you can do, how you can make the better choices. A particular favorite of mine, because I don't have a lot of patience for things that take a long time on my phone, is...
do any of us?
No, I know. Well, some people, if you want little bite-sized pieces of information, then the tips are good. But there's also a, I think it's called a guide option. And if you go there, you get the top 10 tips and just the facts, basically, just some general information in a straight list. Includes some recipes, it includes specific chemical names to look for on the label. It tells you which things you can find on the label and you can't. So it's an easy way to just get the basics. And so I particularly like that. And you can also, we don't recommend specific products because we're trying to stay, sort of avoid any conflict of interest issues. But we do, you can scan a barcode of a product, and then the app will automatically load tips, all tips that are relevant to that type of product. So you'll get close to, as close as we can get you to a recommendation.
This study that we've been talking about that I was part of, is that still ongoing? Can people still send you samples and find out their own chemical burdens?
Yeah, that's great. Great question. We are going to be continuing to collect samples through October, so just through the end of this month.
This is a great service for people who want to know about what's in their own bodies, but as researchers, you're also using this information, right?
That's right. So we did this primarily because we wanted to collect exposure data on a group of people, and particularly where we have opportunity to interact with them. So, for example, with your chlorinated phenols, I can talk to you some more about, you know, your water or other possible places where that might be coming from. Everybody who participated in the study answered a bunch of questions about what products they use, what they ate, or some basic questions that help us connect their exposure to what is currently known about potential sources. So now we'll be able to get better data on how important is sunscreen avoidance for the benzophenone. How important is, if you're avoiding parabens on the label, for your paraben levels? How important, you know, are different sources of triclosan or mothballs for the levels that you will carry in you? And that will help us to be able to say, you know, this, it's more important to avoid the toothpaste than it is to avoid the, you know, something else. So just trying to make it easier, I guess, for people. And beyond making it easier, it also helps our, you know, advocates who are working on policy changes to know sort of where the major public health benefits will be from reducing exposure or focusing regulation.
That was Ruth Ann Rudell. She's the lead scientist for Silent Spring Institute's crowdsourced Detox Me survey. We realize that many of the environmental stories we bring you are less than upbeat. Well, next week on Living Lab Radio, MIT professor Susan Solomon shares her take on how we've solved global environmental problems in the past and why she's optimistic about the future.
So my three P's that I teach my students are, is it personal? Is the science perceptible? And do we see practical solutions?
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. In the meantime, you can connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.